This is Peace Talks Radio, the series on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution. I'm Paul Ingalls. Today, another program in our Profiles in Peace series. We're highlighting a sometimes overlooked figure in the world of diplomacy, Ralph Bunche, who negotiated tirelessly for the United Nations for over 25 years after World War II. He worked for peace all over the globe and helped bring independence from colonial rule to many Africans and Asians. He also wrote compellingly about human rights and civil rights. Many believe his international work helped set the stage for improvements in civil rights for African Americans in the United States. Ralph Bunche died in 1971, but we continue our talk about his life and times, and we're pleased to have with us his son, Ralph Bunche Jr. Welcome, Ralph.
Thank you very much.
It's good to have you here. Ralph Bunche Jr. is a financial and development consultant for countries in Africa. He worked for many years as an investment banker, beginning with a position at the then Citibank in its Africa division, and he now lives in London. Also joining us in the studio is Tanya Covington, a mediator and diversity trainer who lives in Albuquerque, New Mexico. She was a guest on a 2003 Peace Talks program about improving race relations. She suggested a program on Ralph Bunche then, so we've invited her to be back with us on today's show. Tanya, welcome.
Thank you.
Later, we hope to talk with filmmaker Bill Greaves, who produced the film Ralph Bunche, An American Odyssey for PBS. I'd actually like to start with Tanya Covington as an example of Ralph Bunche's legacy. Tanya, an African-American who was born in Washington, D.C. in 1955. So you would have been a teenager when Ralph Bunche Sr. passed away. When do you recall becoming aware of his story, and how has it impacted you?
Actually, I knew about Dr. Bunche from a very early childhood. I come from a very, very political family in Washington, D.C. So I was taught African-American history very early on, even before I started school. And Dr. Bunche was one of the heroes that my parents talked to me about. There was also sort of a running joke in my family, even though at the time I didn't know the term mediator. Whenever anyone would get into an argument and someone would step in and try and calm the argument, someone in the family would say, "We don't need you to Ralph Bunche our argument." So I knew early on that he had the role of a peacemaker, the person who solved the arguments. And I think because of that, he was always of interest to me, and also because I knew that he had won the Nobel Peace Prize. And then years later, when I started learning about mediation, I decided to learn even more about him as my role model. And I think I've been a fan of his for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. So, Ralph Bunche Jr., what do you think was at the core of his conflict resolution philosophy that made him successful?
He was a tireless worker. As a family, we didn't see him very much, but he was a good father, but he wasn't home a lot. He was an excellent listener on both sides of the conflict. He knew how to relax people with humor. And only after studying for quite some time and thinking about it was he able to find compromises that seemed to appeal to both parties. He never believed that fighting it out was the solution. So he started with a bias against armed conflict. And through humor and long hours, he was able to relax the parties that they were going to get a semblance of a fair shake on both sides of it. And he was very clear. He just didn't believe that fighting was the solution to anything. What we all learned after the Second World War is this is not the way forward. And there has to be a better solution, and that's what he believed in. And hopefully that's what the United Nations did, and now it hopefully can recreate itself in a way that the world will look to it for a conflict resolution as opposed to what's happening with us today, which the UN is sort of the second thought.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask Tanya or Ralph to comment on this. What do we know of Ralph Bunche Sr.'s historical influences? I mean, we know that Gandhi had read Tolstoy and Thoreau and the Bible on his path to nonviolence, and that Dr. Martin Luther King did, of course, and then added the writings of Gandhi.
I don't know exactly who he was reading. I have read somewhat in his biography about the people that he was exposed to in growing up. I think he had a very strong parents and grandmother as well, who I think really worked hard to instill in him very good values, which he seemed to have not only gotten the way that that some kids do, but to have incorporated into his spirit.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't say specifically, but I can tell you he was a voracious reader, a reader of books and theories. He believed, as I've said, that you can only learn by reading, and you teach yourself as much as you are taught by others.
Your father was born in Detroit in 1903. He lived in an integrated neighborhood there, but his parents were in poor health, so they moved to New Mexico in 1914. It seems like your father's years in New Mexico were probably influential in terms of his understanding race relations. He would have been interacting with Native Americans and Mexicans and also dealing with racial prejudice that was here at the time.
My dad did experience a lot of intolerance and prejudice, but I think he realized that there are ways to defeat intolerance and prejudice by intellectual curiosity and totally not accepting any intolerance. I mean, he basically believed, as most people I hopefully do, that we're all created equal. We may have different opportunities and different skill sets, but that shouldn't be prejudicial to our development. And so he was totally intolerant for any prejudice. I mean, the story that was involving myself is the one I remember the most, which is we were living in Forest Hills when the U.S. Tennis Open was still played at the Forest Hills Tennis Club, and I was encouraged to take tennis lessons, and I wasn't bad at the stage. I wasn't great, but I wasn't bad. But the pro thought that I had some potential and encouraged us to join the club. Well, we said okay, and my dad applied.
This was 1957, I think.
I guess it was, yeah. And we were accepted, but on the basis that we would get honorary memberships. And my dad didn't understand what this was about, and we realized what this was about is that they had no people of color or non-Christians in the club. Categorically, we would not accept it, and we never did accept it. I never joined the club, and the club changed. But one of the things in my father's history, people do not think he spoke out enough against racial intolerance. Every speech I've ever heard him make, and I've heard him made quite a number, he did obviously state his position on non-acceptance of any discrimination based on the fact that he did experience a lot of discrimination when he was growing up. He had the view, however, that he was an international civil servant and had to be very careful that he didn't get involved in domestic politics because he didn't support, if you will, outrightly one party versus another party, and he didn't want to get that to conflict with what his role was as an international civil servant. But there was no doubt in my mind, and no doubt anybody who knew him, that he was a strong believer in no racial bigotry and would not accept it. And to his dying day, he never did.
One of the interesting things I think that may have shaped him is when Dr. Bunch Sr. lived in Albuquerque, because of the small African-American population in Albuquerque, the public schools were never segregated here. And so he did have the opportunity to go to school with kids from lots of different races. And I'm sure that had an impact on him in that he got to see early on what a multicultural society was actually like and got the opportunity to live that. And I'm sure that's something that stayed with him for a very long time.
It stayed with him. He passed it on to his family. And mm-hmm. It's what we firmly believe in. He never believed in separate schools for separate races or religions.
Mm-hmm.
He thought that we would all grow and develop more by sharing views and thoughts and backgrounds and idiosyncrasies. And he didn't believe that we should, you know, water down our background, not at all, but we should develop it, but in a way that we could all work together for the good of mankind, if you will, or for our own development.
Let me ask you both to comment on this question. Ralph Bunche faced conflict over race relations and conflict over warring countries throughout his career, and he confronted all of those directly, earned his reputation as a peacemaker and a skilled negotiator. What are some of the overriding principles that he followed and techniques that he applied that individuals can pick up on and apply to everyday life? And maybe, Tanya, let me start with you, because it seems like you might have thought about this.
Well, I think one of the most important things, as Ralph Jr. has said, is that Ralph Bunche, and I think everyone else who is a good peacemaker and negotiator, begins by being a good listener. And beyond even being a good listener, they are genuinely interested in the well-being of other people and other groups. And I think that that's one of the things that I certainly see that has been somewhat missing in a lot of what's going on in the current situation, is when you have people who are only concerned about themselves or their particular party or country, and not as much concerned about the well-being of the world, then you're always going to have problems. It's difficult to make peace if you aren't genuinely concerned about the people that you're trying to make peace with.
And your work is often on a smaller scale.
Mm-hmm.
So what about the application of those principles?
Same thing. I find that when I go into a conflict situation, I try and go into it looking at it as though what I'm going to do is not only important to the people that I'm working with, the people who are in conflict, but it's important to me. I feel like every thing that we do is sort of like the ripples in a pond. If we've got a small disagreement over here, it causes ripples and then more, and it causes more and more, and pretty soon you end up with a tidal wave. But if you can begin to smooth out all of those different ripples that are going on, then you end up with a peaceful body of water. And I feel like we are all very much intertwined, far more than we know. So to make peace anywhere, in any situation, I feel like helps the greater whole.
Hmm. Ralph, what do you think about what people can draw from your father's history and legacy on a day-to-day basis?
I think that one of the problems we have today is that, and maybe we've had in the past, that there are certain groups that have a vested interest in maintaining a warlike outlook and really don't want peace. I think my father, when he did most of his work, he was in situations where people had differences of view and differences of land mass on economics, etc., but generally didn't have a long-term interest in preserving a warlike situation as we have in Northern Ireland, if you will, at a certain stage, and maybe we have in Afghanistan, and maybe we're going to have in Iraq at this point in time. So I think the landscape has changed today. I think there are lessons to be learned, as we've talked about, in terms of how you negotiate for peace. But I think you have to learn, you have to understand the economic and the political background of individual groups to be able to negotiate with them on what's right for them and what's right for their opponent. We cannot ignore the history of these groups and what the motivation of them and what the backing for these groups are. Now, some of them are going to be splinter groups, and that's where the problem is. If they're splinter groups and they have a hold. I personally believe Hezbollah is a splinter group, for instance, today. But it does have a hold on the local population, part of the local population, and it's hard to extract itself. And what Hezbollah would do without the conflict is a interesting question. Probably wouldn't exist.
Mm-hmm. But in any case, sort of an empathic understanding of what all of these constituencies and groups are representing is is key.
Absolutely. That's the key. You have to understand that, and you have to build on that knowledge.
I want to thank both Tanya Covington and Ralph Bunch Jr. for joining us for this discussion and these memories of Ralph Bunch.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to a Peace Talks radio special, Ralph Bunch, Profile in Peace. And in a moment, we'll go back to the phone line to New York City to talk with award-winning filmmaker William Greaves, whose documentary called Ralph Bunch, An American Odyssey, aired on PBS in 2001 and is still available for educational use. Here's an excerpt from that film, this chapter exploring Ralph Bunch's engagement in the civil rights movement of the 1960s in the United States. Actor Sidney Poitier narrates.
The Great March on Washington. Bunch marches and speaks to the throng.
My identification with this effort for the emancipation of the Negro, the full emancipation of the Negro, is automatic because I am a Negro. But I am here also and would be here also automatically as an American. Because what is being done here today is, in my view, one of the truest and finest expressions of American democracy at work.
The U.S. was being embarrassed around the globe by the existence of segregation within the United States. It was, in fact, a Cold War propaganda tool that was used against the United States. And in his effort to bring freedom to peoples of color around the globe, Ralph Bunch increased the level of pressure that existed on the United States.
When you look at him in 1965, with his coat off and marching at the front of the line in Selma to Montgomery, you see a kind of war-weary battler who's come back from the great national, international efforts to pick up the slack at home and to try to achieve here what he's been working on over there.
The world is overwhelmingly with us in this struggle, in this cause, of that you may be assured. I say to Governor Wallace, no American can ever be an outsider anywhere in this nation. All of these people who have come in this great phalanx are very great Americans. You have written a great new chapter in the heroic history of American freedom. Thank you.
Historians Dr. Edwin Smith of the University of Southern California and Dr. John Hope Franklin from Duke University, plus the comments of Ralph Bunch himself in the William Greaves documentary Ralph Bunch, An American Odyssey. Bill Greaves is on the line with us now from New York. Thanks for joining us, Bill.
It's a pleasure to talk with you, Paul.
Why at that point do you think it was important for Dr. Bunch to take those steps out on the streets and become more visible, because it wasn't his modus operandi to be out front, was it?
No, that's quite true. But he was quite a tactician, and he realized that he had succeeded with his various initiatives in fostering a feeling of liberalization of society was important, and that the world was ready to endorse that sort of thinking. And he knew that the climate had reached a point where he was on the side of the gods in terms of the how people in America would feel about his joining the civil rights movement.
Bill, I'm interested in your personal journey of discovery with this project, the documentary on Ralph Bunch. Can you tell us a little bit about a statement that I read in an interview that you gave that admitted that you, as an African American, didn't feel like you knew as much about Ralph Bunch as you felt like you should have known when you began this process.
That's quite true. I really didn't have too high opinion of Ralph Bunch because I really didn't know anything about him.
And if you didn't have a very high opinion of him to begin with, that must have been based on some undercurrent of opinion about him and his history, right?
Yes, that's quite true. I felt that, like so many people that I knew at the time, that he wasn't really a very effective person. He was just involved with a whole lot of white people who were not interested in the black experience. But it came to pass that as I did this research on him, I realized that he was a very powerful thinker, very complicated individual who was a master in conflict resolution. Once he got into the United Nations organizations, and even before that, he chanced to become involved in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. With he worked closely with Eleanor Roosevelt in getting the Universal Declaration of Human Rights accepted, endorsed by the United Nations, which is no small feat.
Right. Well, he ended up going to Harvard for graduate school, and your documentary points out that black civil rights leaders had their eyes on him even when he was only about 25 years old as a future leader.
Yes, well, you know, in an interesting and curious way, he's a kind of a precursor to Barack Obama. Barack Obama is the closest thing, I think, to Ralph Bunch, as far as I'm concerned. But Ralph Bunch was very much involved in these various initiatives. The thing that really bothered him all along throughout his career, particularly in the early part of his career, was simply the fact that America, the American creed, was something that, even though it had all these lofty words that talked about freedom and democracy and liberty for all and all of that, the Bill of Rights and so on, he really felt that was just so much air, you know, so much small talk. He knew that it was important to put teeth in those words. The freedom and liberty to all had to be words that were more than words. Had to be realities.
Well, your documentary so interestingly points out that even in his class valedictory address at graduation at UCLA, he wrote this fourth dimension of personality speech where, let me quote from it here, he says, "Man professes strict moral codes, promulgates them through great educational systems, and solidifies them in law, but invariably his subsequent deeds belie and pervert his original intent." I mean, this is when he is in his mid-20s. This is what you're talking about, isn't it?
Exactly, precisely. That speech was, you could say, is the basis, was the theme of his whole life, of his legacy can be summed up in those words.
Your documentary says that it was basically a good time for Dr. Bunch in the final years of his life. He died in 1971, but he began to see the wheel turning a little bit and moving toward the hopes that he expressed in that graduation speech so many years before.
Quite so.
What do you, in closing, Bill Greaves, hope to continue to accomplish with the availability of your film, Ralph Bunch, An American Odyssey?
I like to think of my film as a kind of a tool that young people who are interested in America, who are interested in the world and civilization, I would hope that it would give young people in college and universities a real interest and enthusiasm about the work and significance of Ralph Bunch, and to let them know that it's possible that an individual can make a difference, but not necessarily by waving a flag or marching individually, but using their intellectual minds to help develop a society that in which people can walk with dignity as on the world's great boulevards, as Bunch would say.
The real objective must always be the good life for all the people. International machinery will mean something to the common man throughout the world only when it is translated into terms that he can understand. Peace, bread, housing, clothing, education, good health, and above all, the right to walk with dignity on the world's great boulevards.
The words of Ralph Bunch, as read in William Greaves' documentary, Ralph Bunch, An American Odyssey. Thanks to our guests, Sir Brian Urquhart, Tanya Covington, William Greaves, and Ralph Bunch, Jr. Special thanks to David Griffin and to KUNM at the University of New Mexico in Albuquerque. Support for Peace Talks comes in part from the McCune Charitable Foundation of New Mexico, the Peace Tales CD Project, and from listeners like you. I'm Paul Ingalls. Thanks for listening.